labor situation of popular music scholarship, a semi-autobiographical case study.
It has been widely discussed in the past few years that over 70% of university and college courses in the U.S., anyhow, are now taught by non-permanent staff, including adjunct or sessional instructors, as we call them in Canada. In many fields, the majority of such instructors have their doctorates, or will shortly, but they also often teach only part-time. In music performance, the part-time scenario has been typical for decades, but those instructors usually do not have doctorates, and they almost always generate additional income by performing and or running private studios. Sessionals are much less common in music history and culture, and less common than in English, for example, which means that a lot of music PhDs don't have any kind of academic position. As for popular music, on most of the occasions when it appears in academic job postings at all, it is listed as a desirable add-on to a specific specialization in classical music, world music, or an interdisciplinary area. Popular music is thus only sometimes taught by full-time instructors who specialize in it. I'm a musicologist, though, and music academic societies do not track information that can be used to determine career stages and employment outcomes. However, despite rhetoric concerning privacy, I was able to investigate the websites of the 37 of the world's 146 music graduate programs in musicology and or ethnomusicology that include a lot of names. Extrapolating to all such programs suggests that there are roughly 6,500 people connected or recently connected to them, about 3,200 current graduate students, 1,300 PhDs since 2010, 1,300 faculty members, and 650 adjunct instructors, with some faculty and instructors without PhDs. At institutions without graduate programs in musicology and or ethnomusicology, there are probably another 1,500 active music instructors, music history and culture music instructors, permanent faculty members and adjuncts, some again without PhDs. In addition to the around 3,000 PhDs working full or part-time at post-secondary music departments, nearly twice as many are no longer affiliated with them. From a survey of UCLA's popular music-friendly musicology graduate program, the non-academic employed scholars among its PhDs since the early 1990s include performers, private studio instructors, conductors, library employees, university admin workers, an instructional web designer, a music software employee, a freelance political journalist, a visual artist, a dog trainer, it goes further and further away from what you expect, a dog trainer, a legal secretary, an airport retail manager, and at least one unemployed recipient of social assistance. In addition, almost as many of them are off the radar. In all areas of music history and culture, the Musicology and Ethnomusicology Job Wiki, 2006 to the present, and including international postings, includes an average of only 75 positions per year, excluding failed and canceled searches. That number includes tenure-track, non-tenure-track, and full and part-time temporary positions, as well as the handful of postdoctoral fellowships. It represents one position each year for every five out of about 375 newly minted music PhDs. That's exactly the same recent 20% hiring rate as in the field of history. It is necessary to use the American Musicological Society's database and RILM together to get a reasonably complete list, as the AMS relies on self-reporting, which is mainly just done by some musicologists. Out of those 375 PhDs per year, there are probably about 22 with dissertations on popular music. I don't know if we have a more accurate count than that, but that's close to what I would expect. However, there's an average of just two new full-time continuing specialist academic positions in popular music each year, which is an academic hiring rate lower of 9%. Occasionally, there are also relevant jobs in music theory, music performance, sociology, English, American studies, cultural studies, and communication and media studies, perhaps especially the latter. However, they generate specialist popular music positions even more rarely than music departments do. I checked the wikis for most of those fields, and there just weren't very many there. There were a few that mentioned music as a possible secondary area to African American studies, for example. In the 1970s and 80s, a few departments began to offer a popular music course as an elective, but such courses were rarely taught by full-time faculty members. Indeed, many early popular music courses were launched by people who did their graduate work after having already taught, etc., in such areas. In the 1990s, academic work in the interpretation, analysis, and so on of popular music then emerged as a primary area of work for some of us. Even today, though, with a few notable exceptions, an advanced seminar on popular music for music majors or graduate students or in other disciplines has only occasionally become a significant ongoing part of a program. In almost all cases, such seminars remain electives, not core courses, even for majors. My own journey in music academia involved co-editing a book, Rush and Philosophy, about 2 years ago, publishing book chapters and journal articles, presenting dozens of conference papers and invited talks, and developing and teaching dozens of courses and seminars at 7 institutions. However, I only had the opportunity on a couple of occasions to include more than a tiny fragment of either of my 2 primary research areas. The first of those is the one I just alluded to, the post-countercultural, progressive, and post-progressive hard rock music of the Canadian band Rush. White boys, yes, but hardly canonic and unproblematic, especially read genre, technology, and ideology. Rush's music was the subject of my dissertation, 4 book chapters, 2 journal articles, 5 conference papers, 2 invited talks, radio interviews recently when they were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and a hopefully forthcoming listener's guide. The second area that I work on is film and television music, especially the rock, pop, film, jazz, classical, and other no-brow music of The Simpsons. That work includes a journal article, 7 conference papers, 2 invited talks, and a book project. Again, hopefully book project. I had full-time academic employment in 3 temporary positions for a total of about 2 years, plus a similar amount of teaching in part-time sessional positions over a total of about 5 additional years. Often concurrent with that teaching, I worked part-time as a classical music choral singer, in music-related administrative and technical support, and or as a writer for reference articles, mainly on popular music and film music, at least recently, and classical music program notes. I also returned to school to study software development full-time for 1 year. My various temporary and part-time work experiences, though, have been spread far too thin for real-world contexts in executive or administrative assistance, web content, information technology, and so on. I realize this is all very negative, but we should recognize the strong possibilities of not landing full-time academic positions, of moving frequently, as I have, and even of bankruptcy and welfare. I have kept complete records of all of my academic job applications and the original postings from the fall of 2001 to the present. The job wiki started in the fall of 2006 for positions starting in 2007, and from then until now, I applied for 168 full and part-time academic positions, including a handful of fellowships. In 2006-07, which is the one I'll talk about the most, of the 2 dozen full-time tenure-track and temporary positions to which I applied, fairly generic postings in 20th century music made up 18 of the postings, 75%, of which 13 were tenure-track and 5 adjunct, with 15 in the US and 3 in Canada. They usually included secondary coverage of world music and or some other non-popular music area. Of those, the only tenure-track position in Canada was at the Université d'Ottawa. In 2006-07, full-time positions that mentioned popular music as a secondary area, often along with jazz and or the blues, made up 5 positions, 21%, of which 2 were tenure-track and 3 were not, with 4 in the US and 1 in Canada. The one in Canada was a tenure-track position at the University of Victoria. I had a preliminary informal interview about it with Michel Filion at the AMS meeting in Los Angeles in the fall of 2006. The position went to Jonathan Goldman, Université de Montréal, 2006, an expert on Pierre Boulez. As far as I know, he has not taught courses in any of the secondary areas mentioned in the posting, world music, popular rock music, and Canadian music, although he presumably covered at least some post-1945 Canadian art music in one of his upper-level seminars. One of their part-time instructors teaches popular music and songwriting, and another teaches African hand drumming, but neither of them has a degree beyond an undergraduate one. Of the 2 dozen full-time positions to which I applied in 2006-07, only one of them, 4%, mentioned popular music as a primary area. It was not included on the musicology and ethnomusicology job wiki, although that was an early year of the wiki. It didn't catch everything. The position was for a full-time lecturer at Cardiff University in Wales. I didn't have an interview for that. The position went to one of their PhD alumni, Sarah Hill, Cardiff 2002, an American-born expert on Welsh language, popular music, and culture. She had also already been working in the UK from 2002-07 as a lecturer at the University of Southampton. In 2007-08, I had a 9-month multi-leave covering assembled position at UCLA. I taught popular music or film music about two-thirds of the time for a team-taught interdisciplinary freshman cluster on America in the 60s, which was really 54 to 74, the long 60s. I taught music lectures on R&B and rock and roll, civil rights music and the folk revival and new folk music, American pop and the British invasion, Motown and soul, and glam and progressive rock. I also taught a cluster seminar on the origins of rock criticism in the late 60s, another cluster seminar on American film music from 54 to 74, and a music history seminar on popular music cover songs. That was my last academic job. In the spring of 2008, I had an in-person finalist interview at Kutztown University in Pennsylvania, where their percussion professor knows about Rush, and another at the University of Southampton, already mentioned. The Kutztown position went to Todd Rober, North Texas, 2003, an expert on the early symphony, who is also a world music percussionist. Kutztown has a number of classical performance professors who teach music appreciation, and two of their three committee members did not take my ideas about music history and culture at all seriously and were actually fairly antagonistic about my work in popular music. The Southampton position went to Ben Pickett, Columbia, 2008, an expert on experimental music. After only 1 year, he left Southampton for Cornell. Southampton in 2009-10 then hosted a postdoctoral fellow, Valeria De Luca, Princeton, 2009, an Italian born expert on early and early modern music, musical theater, and opera. She ended up continuing there as a full-time lecturer. In 2008, I also had a first-round in-person interview for a position at Pasadena City College that listed all of the following. Get this. A two-semester sequence in music history and literature for music majors, plus such courses as music appreciation, music in the contemporary world, music cultures of the world, history of jazz, history of rock, Afro-American music, Latin American music, Asian music, and history of opera, plus the idea of additional courses in other areas of the instructor's expertise. Yes, you may all laugh. I had earlier taught several music history courses, core courses, medieval and Renaissance, 1888 to 1945, and since 1945, plus music appreciation, the history of jazz and popular music, and I had also been a TA for the history of opera. However, given such a formidable list, there was no way of knowing which courses they really wanted for a full-time faculty member to teach. And they also unpromisingly asked for a basic 18th century classical topic to be covered in the lecture sample. Not surprisingly, the college's music department presently lists 11 full-time faculty members, but only one musicologist, covering only Western classical music as far as I can tell, and 56 adjunct instructors. That's 84% adjunct. In 2008, I also had a preliminary phone interview with Texas Christian University for a one-year position, I still don't know why, that involved teaching a music history survey, early music, and world music. I went to Catherine Turner, Texas, 2008, an expert on early and early modern music and women, especially in Italy. For specializations in popular music that started in 2008, there were four continuing positions, including one at Western Ontario, where one of my own former University of Alberta graduate students, Jay Hodgson, is a professor. There were then three popular music positions for 2009 and two in 2010, one of which was a senior appointment for my own UCLA dissertation advisor, Rob Walser, at Case Western. It was in 2009-10 that I went back to school full-time to study computer applications development. As a part of the program, in the summer of 2010, I had a 12-week co-op work term. For Americans, that's paid internship. In Brunswick, Maine, for the AMS and the Bowdoin International Music Festival. My new modernized web-based version of doctoral dissertations in musicology, developed using PHP and MySQL, et cetera, quickly became the most popular part of the AMS website. On the other hand, the music festival's idea of having media-enriched web-based program notes, I used XHTML and CSS, et cetera, was abandoned after that one season. While back in school, I applied for half my usual number of academic jobs, but still had a preliminary phone interview in winter 2010 for a position at Ramapo College. I went to Mark Goodell, Harvard 2010, an ethnomusicologist with expertise on Afro-Brazilian religious music. In winter 2011, I had a phone interview with Vermont's St. Michael's College for an American music position involving jazz and rock, plus possible work in music technology, songwriting and recording, the blues, pop, musical theater, Latino music, and gender and music. I went to William Ellis, Memphis 2011, an expert on the music of the American South. Those are my last two academic interviews. The wiki stopped listing position specializations in 2011, but there was one tenure-track popular music position per year from 2011 to 13 at Carleton College, Bowdoin College, and Alberta's McEwen University. Between the fall of 2010 and winter of 2013, I also applied for about 100 IT positions, had a total of 8 preliminary interviews. My software development program GPA was 3.97, and I won a pair of project awards along with my 2 teammates. However, I was not considered a suitable candidate for any of those IT jobs, mostly because my 3 months experience was not deemed substantial enough even for an entry-level position. To put the situation in context, a university co-op computer science or engineering student already has 2 full years of real-world full-time work experience upon graduating. Meanwhile, in some bizarre way, my having a PhD, even in musicology, made me overqualified for those exact same entry-level IT positions. From April 2011 to January 2013, I independently learned and used the content management and web development frameworks Drupal and Omeka. I enrolled in a pair of small business courses and developed 3 different versions of a business plan and collaborative community website for music history and culture that would allow people to engage not only with a wide variety of music, including popular music, but also with one another's ideas. The most recent version of that is called Our MuseNet. Also, since February, I've transitioned my personal website and blog over to a self-hosted WordPress solution. And I've also worked for a choir that I sing in and volunteer for on a website, also using WordPress. I also continued with book projects, conference papers on The Simpsons, for example, web content, and so on. However, none of those recent activities has generated any income for me, and I will now have to consider doing office work through temp agencies. That's what they're telling me. It's a way to get some reasonably normal work experience on my resume. Music academia needs to make a concerted effort to address what other types of work could be done by its many colleagues who do not end up in academic positions. Towards the end of its 195-page career guide from 2011, the AMS buried a handful of out-of-date, largely irrelevant pages about the non-academic world. The already negligible section not only includes no profiles of music scholars, but also not a single example document from one. It's completely lifted from other fields. In 2012 to 13, the Society considered for the first time listing scholarly related teaching as being among the activities of music scholars. The AMS has done 8 video interviews with musicologists, but they're all with faculty members. So are 15 of IASPM US's 17 video interviews, the other 2 being with professional music critics. By comparison, the American Historical Association has a career guide that covers the following 7 alternative academic work areas: classroom work at all levels, museums, editing and publishing, archives, historic preservation, federal, state, and local history, and consulting and contracting. The publication includes profiles of 18 PhDs in history from across those 7 areas, and the Society's website also includes the field's job postings. In addition, history has long been at the center of the digital humanities. Music academia needs to do much better. One of the main problems of alternative academic career paths is that the pace of music academia does not make any kind of sense outside of it. For example, in 2001, I gave an IASPM Canada paper about Rush, fan demographics, etc., and the Society's papers from then and 2000 were going to be collected into a journal issue of Dual Year Conference Proceedings. You know where this is going. The journal issue finally arrived after more than 11 years in the spring of 2012. The editors claimed that most of us who presented back then have since gotten positions in the field, but that is simply not true. Of the 11 presenters in that proceedings journal, 3 already had academic positions by 2000-2001, 2 full-time and 1 part-time. 2, 25% later got tenure-track positions. Of the remaining 8, all of whom completed their PhDs after 2001, 2, 25% later got tenure-track positions. 2, 25% later got temporary or part-time positions. And 4, 50% presently do not work in academia. In a related matter, in 2000-2001, IASPM Canada had 2-day conferences with 17 to 21 papers held in university classrooms, if I remember correctly. Now we have a 4-day conference with about 80 papers held in a hotel. That's fine, as long as we recognize that maybe there aren't actually any more jobs now than there were then. How can we proceed? Lots of questions. Oh, okay. I'll be quick. How can we proceed? If so many music scholars don't end up in continuing full-time academic positions, how will we be able to find new creative ways to continue working, such as for the public or in other ways outside of academia? Why are we all expected to submit to the highly inefficient, not to mention increasingly permissions-mandating context of peer review, when we know what it's for? It's for tenure recruitment by people that do land in academic jobs. If the Canadian University Music Society wants a new website, and I express concern that my similar paid IT work for the AMS hasn't gotten me anywhere in the real world, shouldn't they care at least a little bit about my having to come up with something sustainable out of that kind of work? The iAspen US has a call out for an assistant editor for its website, and I'm questioning whether I would apply because it's unpaid and voluntary. In the realm of public writing, I've done a lot of music encyclopedia reference entries, but that doesn't pay very much, and it seems that doing passive income writing in, for example, digital-only ebooks might be a good way to go. So I'm looking into that. In the realm of public institutions, given that it hasn't so far, will the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Museum ever accept a guest lecturer by a PhD who doesn't have an academic position? Will it ever have another job opening? Should most people who want to specialize in popular music studies primarily and or initially focus on something else? Is it a good idea for conferences involving scholars who need to find non-academic work to be held on weekdays? Given the costs otherwise incurred and or funding needing to be solicited, why don't we use technology to enable collaborative community websites and or the possibility of remote conference participation? And finally, a question about questions. Do we ask ourselves nearly enough questions about how we do things? Difficult issues, I realize.
Well, thank you very much for the presentation. Great, so we'll talk about your experience and it also reflects the conversation that started this morning.
Yep. I modified some sentences based on that. Yeah.
So I was just, it's hard to ask a question because it is a problem, right?
Yeah.
And I think that you do point to the fact that we need to start being more considerate of other alternatives, other avenues, and promoting them, celebrating them.
When I looked at the history site, it was kind of depressing that history seems to have it more together than we do. I mean, part of the problem is that we're partitioned off into our different quadrants, and popular music studies is interdisciplinary across all of these different fields, whether it's a discipline or an area or a field or whatever we're going to call it. That it seems to get, because that exists in some ways, partitioned away from music departments, but it's not really generating more jobs outside of music departments otherwise. Maybe you all know of many jobs that I don't, but it doesn't seem to me that it's... I think it's coming up in the same way as in music. People get into their professional career through something other than popular music and then do it as part of what they do, or it brings them into the kind of work they do more generally across their disciplinary work.
You point out that the description of what a popular music scholar can be, what people want them to be, so broad that it's almost impossible.
Yeah.
Right? You need to have a specialization in something that you can term, teach courses that you can use.
It's,
In my own department,
Communications.
By accepting as many PhD students as university wants to do, but what are these?
I mean, there's all kinds of ventures out there, the School of Rock kinds of things, not quite as cheesy as that movie, but there are those sort of educational ventures that involve popular music performers as well. It's usually rock-oriented, but I'm sure it can move into remixes and other things as well. yeah, so that's one area that's occurred to me recently. I mean, one of the things that I've noticed is that some of the jobs where people have successfully gotten in the last 5 years or so have involved people who've been mainly performers and then moved into academia, for example. So it's picking up on that idea of people like Rob Bowman having worked in criticism and media earlier on, then doing graduate studies and sort of coming full circle back to teach into it in a more advanced way than he would have had his original course. So maybe more with performers or critics or writing, blogging. I mean, there's all these things that people do that aren't really recognized as part of the wider activities of what scholars do now. I've done a few remix things too. I call them scholarly meta remixes. I haven't done a lot of them, but I mean, that's another possible area, which then gets one to think about copyright and fair use, fair dealing, all this kind of stuff too. Yeah, I don't know. Other thoughts? I don't have any. If I had definitive answers, I'd be in a better situation than I am.